Hello and welcome to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. I'm Beth Shank, long-term host of the podcast, with guest host Christina Watkins, who shares concerning information about impacts of the recent Hurricane Helene on mental health.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this podcast. I'm your host, Christina Watkins, nurse practitioner, working in collaboration with an amazing organization, the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments, or ANNIE. For any of you not yet familiar with ANNIE, it is a nursing organization whose sole focus is the intersection of our environment and health. As preeminent national nursing environmental health group, we'd be remiss not to spotlight and discuss the recent weather-related tragedies suffered by the southeastern U.S. with the catastrophic Hurricane Helene, followed only a few weeks later by Hurricane Milton. In this podcast, I'll focus on maternal and infant health, two groups uniquely at risk for adverse health outcomes in the face of disasters that disrupt standard utilities. I'll make the connection between climate change, extreme weather, and water insecurity, and how they affect maternal and infant health after an emergency. The final section will focus on what can be done to help protect moms and their infants in times of crisis. On September 24, 2024, Hurricane Helene made landfall, forever changing millions of lives. Helene was unlike the hurricanes we're used to, whose reach extended miles beyond and above coastal areas. We learned that even so-called climate havens like Asheville, North Carolina, are not as immune as we believe them to be. Our Earth continues to warm and we stall in addressing our greenhouse emissions. We are living in a climate crisis, which means that events like Helene and Milton will only become more common, with more and more people and areas affected, and in the case of these hurricanes, essentially back to back with little time for recovery. These disasters, unfortunately, do not affect everyone evenly. Now I want to share two of the many heart-wrenching stories coming out of North Carolina in the wake of Hurricane Helene. The first from NBC's Today, which features a mom with a two-week-old baby whose home was washed away in the flooding. Luckily, she and her baby could relocate with family. But her baby had not yet latched to breastfeed, so mom was trying to pump breast milk. When a volunteer lactation consultant found her, the consultant found that she had been feeding the baby diluted infant formula. And without running water in the home, there was no way for her to properly clean bottles or her pump parts. This inability to fully clean these feeding implements increases the risk of infection, especially gastrointestinal infection, in which a young infant can be severe or fatal. Thankfully, with the help of the lactation consultant, this mom and baby were able to successfully establish breastfeeding. And if they continue, they will be much safer in facing recovery without having to worry about bottles and pump parts to clean or formula to make. Our next story is from The Guardian. It starts with something all parents can relate to. You're running low on some household item. You should probably go and get whatever that item is, but you're tired. You figure you could always go to the store tomorrow to get whatever you need. We've all been there, haven't we? Well, that's just what one mom thought. This mom decided not to make the grocery run. And a couple days after Helene hit, she watched the supplies of formula she had stocked dwindle, and the frozen milk that she had in the freezer begin to thaw due to lack of power. Of note, the infant in this family was born with a cleft lip and had taken several trials and errors to find the formula that worked. But once the roads were clear to drive, the family found themselves driving to a store 3 hours away because it was the only store in the area that had the formula this baby needed. Families in these communities are faced with the impossible choice of how to use their scarce water. Do they make infant formula for their babies? Use it to wash bottles or pump parts? for other important things like cooking or flushing a toilet. As highlighted in these two stories, pregnant women, nursing moms, and infants are uniquely vulnerable in emergency situations, especially when the power goes out or if there's no access to clean drinking water. Pregnant women are more susceptible to dehydration or to an infection from contaminated foods or water. Studies have shown that events like flooding are linked to higher rates of preterm labor and lower birth weights. Food insecurity leading to malnutrition has more negative consequences in these groups. Infants who rely on infant formula are at extreme risk for dehydration and undernutrition because their families are unable to safely make formula. Powdered formula in and of itself is not sterile. Combined with unsafe water, these infants are at increased risk of gastrointestinal disease, like diarrhea, which again could lead to dehydration and even death. Without power, families could lose their stores of frozen express breast milk, or if using formula, would have no way to safely store the reconstituted formula. Moms who use electric pumps are unable to pump milk without a power source. Without clean, reliable water, they cannot clean their pump parts, again putting themselves and their infants at risk for infection. So what can we do to help protect these precious lives? First, we must understand the current landscape. Now, the family in our second story was lucky to have the means to make that trip for the formula, but so many others affected by extreme weather events are not. Research shows that communities of color were of less affluence or more likely to live in areas that are more prone to extreme weather events. Census data shows that counties with significant income inequality are 23% more vulnerable to natural disasters than affluent areas. These same communities lack the resources to prepare or deal with the aftermath of such events, and thus have longer, less successful recoveries. A new article from Nature by Rachel Young and Solomon Singh found that there were many, many adverse downstream effects beyond the initial storm period. People may put off medical treatment because the money they were going to use towards that treatment is now going to more immediate needs. These downward events raised mortality rates in the study communities after 172 months post-storm. Without addressing the factors that lead to climate injustice, these communities will continue to disproportionately suffer as the frequency of extreme weather events increases. Some listening may not have heard of the term water insecurity. It is defined by the domains low access, poor water quality, and affordability. Before I started the DNP-MPH program at Hopkins, I, like many of you, thought this was not an issue in the U.S., one of the most developed countries in the world. Unfortunately, that is not the reality. We know that a person's race and income level influence whether they have running water in their home. In fact, Black households are twice as likely, and Native American households 19 times more likely than white families to not have running water in their homes. Or if they have running water, it may be coming from a source that is unsafe, such as the case in Flint, Michigan. Many of the communities affected by Helene were in small or rural towns that may not have been connected to public water systems, but instead they relied on private wells. These wells do not fall under the Safe Drinking Water Act, as it only applies to public water systems of a minimum size. These residents can lose water from the pumps of their wells not functioning due to lack of power, or they can be contaminated by stormwater runoff. It is up to the homeowner to make sure the pumps work correctly once power is restored, and to test the water to make sure it's safe for consumption. It puts a lot of burden on these households, who may not have the means to carry out all the necessary repairs and testing. They may not even know that they should be testing their water. And even if the water is restored, families may be told to boil their water for some time. While this protects against many infectious agents, using boiled water to make infant formula would actually increase the lead level exposure to these infants. Boiling water concentrates the lead in the remaining water, which then is fed to infants. Exposure to lead in infancy is linked to negative health effects, like neurodevelopmental delays, behavior issues, and anemia. The other piece of the puzzle is the rate of breastfeeding within the U.S. Now, I'm sure some of you are wondering, why is she talking about breastfeeding? Well, we know that breastfeeding is the safest, most reliable way to make sure infants get complete nutrition that they need, especially during an emergency. Having more moms and infants successfully breastfeeding would help build resilience within our food system and also decrease water insecurity brought on by natural disasters. While there has been some improvement, mothers face many barriers when it comes to successfully breastfeeding their infants, exclusively for the first 6 months of life, as recommended by health organizations like the World Health Organization or the American Academy of Pediatrics. While 83% of moms initiate breastfeeding here in the U.S., only about half are still doing so exclusively by 6 months. In her paper, Dr. Cecilia Tomori, who I am fortunate to have as my advisor in the DNP MPH program, explains that these low rates are due to systemic issues such as the lack of parental leave and structural racism. Thankfully, there's been some federal movement on this front with the passage of the PUMP Act in 2023, which gave workers the right to PUMP Act in 2023, which gave workers the right to time and facilities to within their workplace. It also ensured that they get paid during these breaks unless someone could completely relieve some other duties. The intersection of these three large topics culminates in the stories of the families I discussed earlier. Lack of breastfeeding support, a fragile and fragmented water system, and an increase in extreme weather events due to climate change have stacked the cards against pregnant women, nursing mothers, and their infants, and increase their susceptibility to adverse health outcomes. Now, I know some of you are probably feeling a little depressed or angry right now. I am too. But there is good news. Thankfully, there has been some positive policy movement. In 2021 and 2022, we saw the biggest push to lessen U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. With the enactment of the Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA, and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Bill, the IRA aims to get U.S. greenhouse gas emissions to 50% below 2005 levels by 2030 by incentivizing the advancement and use of renewable energies. This includes 5 programs within the water sector to protect and prepare coastal regions for climate-driven changes, improved stewardship of water and agriculture, improve domestic water supply by improving water infrastructure to disadvantaged communities without reliable water supply, drought mitigation programs, and climate and environmental justice block grants to help communities disproportionately affected by climate change. The Bipartisan Infrastructure Bill focuses on improving our resilience against climate-related events with programs to help weatherize homes, expand the use of electric vehicles, modernize our power grid, and provide $16.5 billion in funding for the expansion of clean energy. Notably, the bill recognizes the millions of American households that experience water insecurity and seeks to improve water infrastructure. The law provides $55 billion in the form of loans and grants to fund water infrastructure improvement projects, creates a lead service line program to fund lead pipe replacement, invests in rural water infrastructure projects, and give states funds to treat water contaminated by PFAS and other emerging contaminants. The bill also addresses Indian water rights in the accordance with the settlement in November 2021 that aims to improve facilities in Native communities. In continuation of these efforts, the EPA has worked to improve drinking water standards. In April of this year, the agency passed the National Primary Drinking Water Regulation, the first-ever national drinking water standard for 6 PFAS, which it expects will improve the drinking water of approximately 100 million people. Just this month, the EPA finalized a new lead and copper rule. The rule's main aim is to replace all lead service lines throughout the country within the next 10 years. It also creates a stricter standard for the amount of allowable lead within drinking water. Concurrently, there has been momentum in helping protect lactating moms and infants. And as mentioned earlier, the PUMP Act was enacted in December 2022, requiring employers to provide breaks in space for pumping and gives moms the ability to file a lawsuit if the employer fails to comply. Efforts are underway to expand the PUMP Act to include women in industries that were previously excluded, such as those working in the airline industry. 2023 saw several bills introduced in Congress to support breastfeeding and maternal health. These bills include an increased access to donor breast milk and improve family support by providing paid family leave for more families. Finally, the Momnibus Bill is a multifaceted bill aimed at improving the lives of pregnant women and their infants. Some of the ways it aims to do this are by funding research and investments in the social determinants of health, increasing federal assistance to address maternal and infant health risks during public health emergencies, and providing funding for community-based programs working to improve maternal health, including those that are doing work related to climate change risks for moms and babies. We nurses are vital to continuing these efforts. Nurses are called to care for our communities no matter the situation or location. As highlighted in the stories from North Carolina, we are the ones in the mountains of North Carolina meeting families on horseback or hiking up blocked roads. It is our duty to advocate for these populations. We can join relief efforts or groups like Annie or the U.S. Breastfeeding Coalition to advocate for systemic change. Before the next crisis, we need to be part of the preparation and planning. We can be the agent that can cross agency silos. For example, we can be messengers to communities about the CDC's Infant and Young Child Feeding Emergency Toolkit, which provides information on how to prepare for emergencies, as well as how to respond and support breastfeeding in such situations. We can make sure that these special populations are never overlooked again. By caring, we can lead the change we want to see. And with that, I'll wrap it up. I've provided some resources in the podcast description, as well as a link to the CDC's Infant and Young Child Feeding Emergency Toolkit. I'd like to say thank you to the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments for giving me this platform. And special thanks to my advisors and faculty at Johns Hopkins for encouraging me to pursue this work. Thanks for listening.
Thank you to Christina for this very helpful information about risks from hurricanes and some solutions for progress. And thank you all for listening. And as a reminder, the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast is 100% non-commercial. We charge nothing and advertise nothing. Please share it with your nursing colleagues, family, and friends. Thank you. Talk to you next time.